It's not fair. Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's probably a phrase every parent has heard at least once. And perhaps even from their child once in a while. Because it seems even as we grow and hopefully mature, we continue to cry out at various events and certain circumstances that exclamation, "It's not fair!" But I wonder, is it truly fairness that we're seeking? Often it's morally a desire for something that benefits us, especially when we're seeing others get what we feel we deserve. Or we cry unfair when we see someone or ourselves to care about that are getting kind of a raw deal in life. You know, while we look at another person who we decide doesn't really merit good things, either not getting punished for what they've done wrong or getting blessed. Well, the dictionary tells us that fairness is an impartial and just treatment or behavior without favoritism or discrimination. So I would dare to say, this side of heaven, because of our human nature, true fairness is ultimately really impossible. As if we're honest with ourselves, none of us are ever truly impartial in any circumstance. Well, the Calvin and Hobbes comic strip, who I love Calvin and Hobbes, kind of gets, I think, the emphasis correct in one of their older strips. You see Calvin kind of going to his father complaining, going, "Why can't I stay up late? You guys can." And you see in the next kind of cell him screaming to heaven, "It's not fair!" And his father responding, kind of looking over his shoulder like, "The world isn't fair, Calvin." To which then we see him kind of sulking off, mumbling to himself, "I know, but why isn't it ever unfair in my favor?" I think Charles Schulz also realized this notion of fairness is one that we struggle with as human beings with his Peanuts characters. Maybe you remember the scene in Charlie Brown's Christmas that they show every year. At least I think they still show every year. You see Sally, kind of Charlie's younger sister, waiting with pad and pen. And as Charlie walks by, she starts following him going, "I've been looking for you, big brother. Will you please write a letter to Santa Claus for me?" Charlie's like, "Well, you know, I don't have much time. I'm supposed to get down to the school auditorium to direct the Christmas play." Of course, Sally ignores him, hands him the pen and paper, and just starts talking. She just says, "You write it, and I'll tell you what to say." Charlie's like, "Okay, shoot." So she begins. "Dear Santa Claus, how have you been? Did you have a nice summer? How is your wife? I've been extra good this year, so I have a long list of presents that I want." At this point, Charlie stops writing and looks at her and just exclaims, "Oh, brother." Sally, of course, ignores her brother and just keeps going. "Please note the size and color of each item and send as many as you can. If it's too complicated, make it easy on yourself. Just send money. How about tens and twenties?" To this, Charlie just is kind of, he's lost at this point. And he throws the pen and paper up into the air and exclaims, "Tens and twenties? Even my baby sister?" And he runs off. But Sally is looking very confused. And she doesn't understand, you know, why did her brother run off? And she's like, "Well, all I want is just what I have coming to me. All I want is my fair share." I mean, isn't that all that we want? We just want our fair share, right? We just want what's coming to us. Yet if we look at our relationship with God, I think we should be careful with a sentiment like that. Because if we truly get what's coming to us, if God really treated us and gave us our fair share, without Jesus, we are shown throughout Scripture that it is not really something that we should covet. Paul reminds us in his letter to the church in Rome, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And that means all. That means all of us here too. And that the consequences, he tells us too, is the wages of sin is death. Without Jesus, what we have coming to us, what is our fair share, is death and separation from God. And it is only through His grace, only through His love and desire for us, that any of us have hope at all. And I think that's part of the point that Jesus is trying to drive home in this parable that so many dislike. I mean, when we think about it on the surface, how is it fair that those that labored, sweated, and strained for hours upon under a blazing sun get exactly the same as those lazy SOBs that worked only one measly hour and probably didn't even work that hard even for that hour? I mean, it's not fair. Our hackles kind of go up. It pushes against our sensibilities. And yet, if we really look at it, how is it unfair? The landowner points that out to those first hired when they start to complain. I think about it, if it was happening in our day, they would not only be complaining, but threatening a lawsuit, probably, against the landowner as well. What does he tell them? He says, look, friend, I'm doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I am generous? See, we have to remember this parable is in part of a section where Jesus is really hammering home this notion of the first being last. The chapter before ours begins with Jesus stating that it is those that have no status in the world that ultimately are the ones to whom the heaven belongs, namely children. And then to counter that, we have the rich young ruler, or the rich young man, coming to try to justify himself as to why he has earned and is owed salvation by God. And yet then we see, because of his unwillingness to let go of the treasures of this life, he is missing out on the treasures of the next life. And then after our little parable here on the vineyard, Jesus reminds them that he will willingly suffer and die in order to procure the grace necessary for all of us to be saved. Which, to be honest, if we're going to really consider this notion of fairness, think about it. How is it fair in any connotation of the word for God himself to suffer and die in order to bless the very creation which caused the suffering and death in the first place? That's why I've often said, I am so thankful life is not fair. Another thing that was pointed out in this parable, why do we often assume that we're the first ones employed in the vineyard? Because think about it. If we believe that we're actually the last ones getting more than our fair share, this parable wouldn't annoy us or bother us at all. What if we are those last ones hired? How much more would we be so incredibly overwhelmed and thankful at God's generosity? So why does it matter whether we are first hired or last hired? Can we not be amazed and thankful at God's generosity no matter who receives it? Too often, as it's been said before, unfortunately, we want this abundance. We want the generosity, this incredible grace and mercy for ourselves, and perhaps for others that we like and have deemed worthy of it. But for everyone else, we want God's justice and punishment and judgment. And often without realizing it, we get to the point where we pin our hope on what we've done for God, how much we've volunteered, how much we've given financially, how often we've helped out at church, or how we've lived a life as a good person. And we forget that it is only by the grace of God provided through Jesus that any of us have hope for the resurrected life. And I do want to make the caveat that Jesus is not talking about social justice here, as we are called as Christians to seek and to be part of making God's justice come forth and shine forth in this fallen world. What this parable is reminding those listening, and I'd say probably geared mostly towards the disciples who continue to miss the point again and again, that it's about God's generosity in providing salvation for all, no matter what hour they come to Him, no matter what they have quote-unquote done for Him. As N.T. Wright explains, God's grace, in short, is not the sort of thing you can bargain with or try to store up. It isn't the sort of thing that one person can have a lot of and someone else only a little. The point of the story is that what people get from having served God in His kingdom is not actually a wage at all. It's not strictly a reward for work done. God doesn't make contracts with us as if we could bargain or negotiate for a better deal. He makes covenants in which He promises us everything and asks of us everything in return. When He keeps His promise, He's not rewarding us for our effort, but doing what comes naturally to His overflowingly generous nature. So the question becomes, are we willing to go to work for God in His field right now in this world? It might be that this is the first hour, or it might be the very last hour. Yet we have the promise that God will bless us, not for the amount of time, but for the willingness and the effort of working for as long as we are able. May we allow the bounteousness of God infuse us so we can truly exclaim, "Amazing grace, how sweet the sound."